You are tuned in to The Watchman, Cedric Muhammad, on the Black Coffee Channel. Cedric Muhammad. You are tuned in to The Watchman, Cedric Muhammad, on the Black Coffee Channel.
Hip, hip, bob, to the socialize, issued rhythms that are on the rise. Step right up, with an open circuit, get this current. Don't you know it's worth it, presented with tribe centricity. Compared, don't you know, vibe electricity, strong like a bomb, quick like a comet, can't get whatever from Mr. Muhammad.
Cedric Muhammad.
We're ready for the law, because of that.
Cedric Muhammad.
If Muhammad has the brakes, we will have the blacks. Okay, I see my brother. You know what we can do? What? Cruise with the rhythm. Shahida, we will too. Posing with the hardy. Harder than the hard. Still Muhammad plays with the full deck of cards. Tribes up the present. Established with the beat. Around the wheels, or utilize the free feet. Go and keep progressing, eagles of the tribe. If we have to swing it, we won't take a dive. Sunday my composite, did you want some more? Yeah. Muhammad push the button, sample sing the score.
Cedric Muhammad. You are tuned in to The Watchman, Cedric Muhammad, on the Black Coffee Channel. Cedric Muhammad. You are tuned in to The Watchman, Cedric Muhammad, on the Black Coffee Channel.
We try to pose, up with the tribesmen, rhythm on your toes. Yes, it's the funk again, appreciate the flow. Then out the circuit breakers, do it with the best. The movers and the shakers, busting out your heat. Vince at my vehicle, burning up the felt. Rhythms up to me, it will be strong like a bomb, quick like a comet. Can I get whatever from Mr. Muhammad?
Cedric Muhammad. Cedric Muhammad.
Sitting on the dock, think you make a wish. Muhammad on Muhammad, damn you quite a dish. Fondling the groove with the mystic sense. Ponies want to try, they push you in the tense. But I don't give a damn, rhythms are the thing. Rhythms have the key, rhythms make you swing. If you don't like it, you can park her up. You listen Mr. Quill, if you're hiding just give up. I'm a rhythm monster, who's out on a plow? Muhammad gives a hook, like Woodsy the owl. From Friday, my compadre, did you want some more? Muhammad push the button, sample thing the score.
Cedric Muhammad. You are tuned in to The Watchman, Cedric Muhammad, on the Black Coffee Channel. Cedric Muhammad.
June 24th, 2009. I want to welcome you to the hottest show in the diaspora. Hold on, let me see if I can spit a hot 2, not a hot 16. What did Jada Kiss say? He said, nah, I know y'all been waiting to hear Kiss Over premiere. Kill you on tape, then watch it over a beer. Let me remix that. Nah, I know y'all been waiting to hear Set Over premiere. Kill you on tape, then have a ginger beer. Ooh, that's a hot 2. Now, you know, if I come through the door with premiere underneath, it's gonna be one of them shows today. Let me just get it out the way up front. I will be tree hugging July 1st and 8th, so we'll be back on the 15th. Thank you for tuning in, folks from all over the world. Brazil, Kingston, Tanzania, Kenya, Poland, China. Maybe Brother Charles can give me some more locations. This is ridiculous. We have confirmed and we have evidence Cedric was not watching General Hospital as the rumor spread. during the lost hour. Show archive should be up. You can examine the proof for yourself. Big show today. Let me run through the captain's log and what the program is for ending intellectual incarceration today. If you saw Real Sports last night with Jim Brown and Bill Russell, I'm going to want to hear from you later on today. And I've said this before, greatest influence on me in terms of broadcasting, the great Maximilla Mapumo, the legendary Walt Baby Love, the best that ever did it, the GOAT of sardonic presentation, star of Star and Buck Wild, and the fourth individual that I think you all sleep on at your own risk, the closet black militant, Bryant Gumbel. Brother Bryant at his best last night, stirring it up, allowing Jim Brown to just run wild, run rampant, run wild. Did y'all see that? It was like Bryant Gumbel teed it up for Jim Brown and just threw him the softballs to knock out the park. No steroids. I want to talk about the United States people, private sector, and government as the number one purveyors of weapons of mass destruction, weapons all over the world, Afghanistan, Iran, and Jamaica. The slavery apology with the reparations escape clause. Let me clap real time for the open beef between the NAACP and the CBC. And a salut, sac passe to the Indaba reparations movement. Please come back. I don't know where the Indaba reparations movement went, but you must be revived. This is sad. This week, let me read a comment I got early on from Rabia Muhammad Chi-Town, who says, I find it interesting that the apology for slavery, with its pointed disclaimer against any form of settlement, or we have no responsibility for the results of slavery, comes at the same time that the Voting Rights Act must be reaffirmed. Now, what matters more in the minds of the masses? I think the Voting Rights Act was put up on a pedestal above H.R. 40 and any reparations claim, so you get what you pay for. You get what you pay for. Real-time applause for the wacktivism that has taken place in our community. I don't know why we can't walk and chew bubblegum at the same time, preserve the Voting Rights Act, and push for H.R. 40, the reparation study bill. So now we have this Civil War moment between the Congressional Black Caucus and the NAACP. Another fine moment in wacktivism. April Ryan. I saw April Ryan yesterday. Everybody, in case you didn't notice it, April Ryan, the beautiful April Ryan, slightly hemmed up our president with the question about black unemployment. I'll talk about that. I'm going to go to France, talk about the succession of Omar Bongo. The fighting has already begun between the family of the late leader of the former Francophone colony. They're already getting it in. I think a daughter and a brother mixing it up. Have you looked at the chicken sandwich that you're eating right now very closely? Yup, that's beef in it. That's some beef in your chicken. I have the evidence. I'm just going down my captain's log today. We're going to get into all of this. I want to expose my own mother as the leader of the covert beef bullion movement. Slipping in beef bullion when you weren't looking. West African Monetary Zone. We're going to talk about why this effort to bring together the countries of West and really Central Africa under a single currency is languishing. And why I'll give you a little excerpt from my proposal to the African Union, where I directly dealt with the West African Monetary Zone, ECOWAS, and that troubled process, I would call it. The Street Sweepers Social Club album, are you feeling it? Two people that I've had the opportunity to meet, a former member of Rage Against the Machine, Boots, from Boots from the Coup, the Street Sweepers Social Club, not the Buena Vista Social Club, Street Sweepers. I hope is that K-Slay? Street Sweepers? Does the Street Sweepers Social Club owe K-Slay a check? E from Queens or any of my mixtape aficionados, Street Sweepers, was that trademarked? On a very serious note, I want to thank those of you who have inquired about my well-being in light of the metro accident that took place in Washington, D.C. I, like, of course, many people in Washington have taken that route. I expect that you will hear more and more about the what those of us who ride that train already know, some things that are unspoken that we've seen will all be brought to light. But I want to illuminate something that I saw at around 6 or 7 o'clock, in between that time, on Monday night when this all happened. And by the way, my mother, she gets right to the point in her voicemail. She says, I want to know, were you in the crash? Just want to know, were you in the crash? Blunt. Mother showing great concern, so I called her and we spoke. Nothing like a mother's love, y'all. Only closely rivaled by that of a father for his daughter. We'll talk about that later. Now, this person that you're seeing on the screen right now, if you're watching the program, is the D.C. Police Chief, Kathy Lorene, out. We saw her and walking with Michael Brown and the mayor of D.C., Adrian Fenty. They were giggling on their way to the podium. Now, anyone who's in the D.C. area, VA, Northern VA, Maryland, D.C., if you saw this, let me know. Now, I don't think in any way that they were laughing about the tragedy, but just seconds before Mayor Fenty in D.C. was to have a press conference, this individual here, the police chief of Washington, D.C., was seen by me and others laughing, making a side joke or a side comment. Again, I do not believe in any way she or Michael Brown or Mayor Fenty or anyone was making a joke about what's happening. But if you are going to be that lackadaisical and careless, just seconds before you come to a microphone for a national press conference to update people on the worst tragedy in the history of transportation, I would maybe say in D.C., certainly Metro, get it together. Now, I dare to say that if this was done in another community or another city, perhaps where the ethnic makeup was or is not what it is in Washington, D.C., we may not have seen that. But I know for sure if anyone had actually witnessed the laughing, people would have been called to account. So if anyone saw this, let me know. Again, I'm sure she's working very hard. Did not mean to slight the victims or the residents of Washington, D.C., those of us who live in this area, for real, not, you know, hiding. She did something that I found offensive, so I'll leave it at that. Enough said. May she continue to do a great job, or aspire to do a great job, and next time show a little more sensitivity. Okay. NBA draft coming up. I want to talk about the first Tanzanian, it looks like, in the history of the NBA, about to get drafted. This is a big deal. I had to check with my East Africans to see how big this is of a deal. I got some advice for Floyd Mayweather Jr. Business advice, unsolicited. He's in a funny place right now. As if you haven't heard, he injured himself while training. It looks like perhaps cartilage problems in his sternum or ribs, last I heard. Floyd Mayweather is walking that line. He's at the edge of his prime. He's about to run over the edge of that period where a fighter's in his prime. They say somewhere in between 28, 29, and maybe 31, 32. He's right there. Be careful, brother. Be careful. I think you should fight on HBO against Juan Manuel Marquez for free. I'll explain why a little later. Anyone out there seen Fally Ba Thibault, if I'm saying it right? Fally Ba Thibault, she's the beautiful host on France 24. If you've seen her, let me know. She has the international version of the look. Very beautiful, but not just physical. What makes a person beautiful, a woman beautiful, in my mind, is, of course, the appearance, but also the spirit and the intellectual power. I can't think of anything more attractive than a black woman breaking down geopolitics. Well, one other thing, a black woman who has the knowledge of self and who teaches spiritual civilization. But next to that, it's a black woman who knows geopolitics and economics. Fally Ba Thibault. Talk about her a little later. Ed McMahon, I want to jump into this real quick. Ed McMahon, the late host of The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, among other things, provided me with a wonderful segue to get into a business principle that I elaborate on in my book, coming soon. It's the principle of subordination in business, something that many of us are going to have to learn quick. Ed McMahon may have been one of the all-time greats in exemplifying this principle of subordination. If you're an entrepreneur, a business owner, Ed McMahon could teach us all something. This is from Access Hollywood last night. Listen carefully, then we'll break it down a little bit more.
It was like two kids kicking a can down the street. We were having fun, and the audience knew that.
You know, and the audience loved every moment that Ed and Johnny gave them during their 30 years of The Tonight Show. I am on the very stage where Johnny and Ed held court as the kings of late night. And these two had a special bond that was simply undeniable.
Here's Johnny.
It's the greatest gig in the world.
All right. Why don't we, do that?
Stop.
I really loved that job. I woke up every morning for 30 years knowing that before the day was out, I was going to sit with him and banter with the best thing that ever happened to television.
Johnny Carson couldn't have found a better sidekick than Ed McMahon. And together, they made The Tonight Show America's nightlight for 30 years. Yeah! And with his unmistakable laugh, Ed proved to be the best one-man audience for Johnny.
Carnac is attempting to divine an answer while you're sitting here giggling.
You know, I've been depressed lately.
Depressed?
Yes! Depressed! Why do you repeat everything? I can go to Taco Bell for that. Why do you...
But their partnership began before The Tonight Show. It was on the 1958 game show, Who Do You Trust?, where Johnny and Ed first teamed up.
Johnny was looking for a new announcer on a show he had. A daytime quiz show called Who Do You Trust? And I come up and auditioned, and in 7 minutes, I got the job.
When Jack Parr left The Tonight Show in 1962, NBC hired Johnny, who brought along his favorite second banana, you guessed it, Ed.
From New York, The Tonight Show, starring Johnny Carson.
And throughout his 30 years on Tonight, good-natured Ed often found himself the butt of Johnny's jokes.
Apparently, Oliver North had a safe at the National Security Council, stuffed with $1 million in cash. He claimed the cash was personally awarded to him by Ed McMahon.
Johnny even poked fun at Ed's drinking. Now, it was rare for Ed to be inebriated during a taping, but he did appear to be so during this episode.
Would you like an army cot or something, maybe? Trying to catch up on a little, little nappy poo just might snap you right out of it. Okay.
I love Joan. I'm the only one who went down to see Joan. Doc has never seen her. You've never seen her. I went to the Wild Animal Farm.
It's all right. It's all right. Okay.
But you're upsetting me.
I don't want to upset you.
Their on-camera rapport was one of a kind, and on Johnny's last night on The Tonight Show in 1992, he emotionally thanked his partner, Ed.
I want to thank the gentleman who shared this stage with me for 30 years, Mr. Ed McMahon.
that whole idea, hook your wagon to a star. I really hooked my wagon to a star, and it was wonderful.
Tomorrow on Access Hall.
Okay, teach. Here is the point of emphasis, Ed McMahon. One more time, teach.
I want to thank the gentleman who shared this stage with me for 30 years, Mr. Ed McMahon.
That whole idea, hook your wagon to a star. I really hooked my wagon to a star, and it was wonderful.
Now, what am I getting at? Subordination. Now, some of us know about insubordination. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about willful, purposeful, spirit-filled, and enthusiastic subordination of your own self. In my book, I have a chapter on etiquette and networking and business, and I touch on subordination. Subordination is a skill. Can I get an amen? Those of you out there know what I'm talking about? Can I get an amen? Subordination is a skill. Look up the word subordination. This is a critical and vital business skill. Networking tool. Some of us call it brown nosing, kissing up, or even kissing ass. Yes. But if you take the stereotypes and the negative values away from it, you and I can use humility and service as a powerful skill to get what you want. And let me give real-time applause, standing ovation to the masters of subordination, women. Now, women don't know how to subordinate to one another too well. That's different. I'm going to put the camera on shortly. Just fall back, relax. We're talking about a vital business skill here called subordination. Ed McMahon subordinated himself to Johnny willfully, cheerfully, spirit-filled, and enthusiastically. And look at him. Look at the career he had, because he did not have the ego problem that prevented him from making another person feel better and look better. Ed McMahon, RIP. This is the science of business right here. Subordination. Women have mastered the skill, except perhaps in their dealings with other women. Now, my mentor and I, Frank, had a four-hour conversation. This will be in my book. We talked on Friday. We built on this. But the ability of women to understand the male ego and demonstrate the uncanny knack, some may say it's because of culturalization or cultural, whatever y'all say. I can't say that word. You know what I'm saying? That somehow women are made subservient. I'm not talking about male supremacy. We get to that later. I'm talking about willful, skillful, deliberate, cheerful, spirit-filled, enthusiastic subordination. Women understand that this is a business tactic. It doesn't make you less of a person or detract from who you are, your identity, or your humanity. I was building with my business mentor, Frank, on this. Here's what Frank told me. He said, subordination can be effective because it feels good to the receiver. If someone goes to get you a drink, find a seat for you, or take you away from a stressful situation, it makes you feel good. You can build up so much cultural capital by doing this within an organization, and it is a great way to stand out when you are networking and meeting the people who could be your next investor, business partner, or employer. If any of you out there are wrestling with learning how to subordinate, or you have already executed this to your benefit, drop me a line. This is what happens, and this is what will be said about you as you count your money to the bank when you subordinate on the level of Ed McMahon.
I want to thank the gentleman who shared this stage with me for 30 years, Mr. Ed McMahon.
That whole idea, hook your wagon to a star. I really hooked my wagon to a star, and it was wonderful.
Teach. Now, everybody cannot do this. I understand. And particularly if you're coming from an oppressed or discriminated against or stomped on people. It doesn't necessarily have to be black people. It can be women. It could be a certain ethnic group or tribal group, racial or religious group. That's a minority population. If you are a minority population and you are trying to rise the ladder and you're dealing with folks from the majority group, it is hard sometimes to willfully, cheerfully, deliberately show humility and give a pleasure or enjoyment to someone else, putting your ego down. Sending your comments on that. One more time, listen to this entire piece.
It was like two kids kicking a can down the street. We were having fun, and the audience knew that.
You know, and the audience loved every moment that Ed and Johnny gave them during their 30 years of The Tonight Show. I am on the very stage where Johnny and Ed held court as the kings of late night. And these two had a special bond that was simply undeniable.
Here's Johnny.
It's the greatest gig in the world.
All right. Why don't we, do that?
Stop.
I really loved that job. I woke up every morning for 30 years knowing that before the day was out, I was going to sit with him and banter with the best thing that ever happened to television.
Johnny Carson couldn't have found a better sidekick than Ed McMahon. And together, they made The Tonight Show America's nightlight for 30 years. Yeah! And with his unmistakable laugh, Ed proved to be the best one-man audience for Johnny.
Karnak is attempting to divine an answer while you're sitting here giggling.
You know, I've been depressed lately.
Depressed?
Yes! Depressed! Why do you repeat everything? I can go to Taco Bell for that. Why do you...
But their partnership began before The Tonight Show. It was on the 1958 game show, Who Do You Trust?, where Johnny and Ed first teamed up.
Johnny was looking for a new announcer on a show he had. A daytime quiz show called Who Do You Trust? And I come up and auditioned, and in 7 minutes, I got the job.
When Jack Parr left The Tonight Show in 1962, NBC hired Johnny, who brought along his favorite second banana, you guessed it, Ed.
From New York, The Tonight Show, starring Johnny Carson.
And throughout his 30 years on Tonight, good-natured Ed often found himself the butt of Johnny's jokes.
Apparently, Oliver North had a safe at the National Security Council, stuffed with $1 million in cash. He claimed the cash was personally awarded to him by Ed McMahon.
Johnny even poked fun at Ed's drinking. Now, it was rare for Ed to be inebriated during a taping, but he did appear to be so during this episode.
Would you like an army cot or something, maybe just... Trying to catch up on a little little nappy poo? Just might snap you right out of it. Okay.
I love Joan. I'm the only one who went down to see Joan. Doc has never seen her. You've never seen her. I went to the Wild Elmo farm.
It's all right. It's all right. It's okay.
But you're upsetting me.
No, I don't want to upset you.
Their on-camera rapport was one of a kind. And on Johnny's last night on The Tonight Show in 1992, he emotionally thanked his partner, Ed.
I want to thank the gentleman who shared this stage with me for 30 years, Mr. Ed McMahon.
That whole idea, hook your wagon to a star. I really hooked my wagon to a star, and it was wonderful.
Tomorrow on Access Hollywood.
Okay, now, this is what I've been kind of alluding to. A couple weeks now, I've been building up to this point. Those of you out there, some have been laid off, some have been fired, whatever. Got to start all over again. Hit the reset button or continue to look for work. But what I have suggested for some of you is to look in the neighborhood at some of the small business owners, some of the entrepreneurs, tens of thousands of them that could use your skill. The point that Ed McMahon made was about hitching yourself to a star. The reason why subordination as a business skill is so important is because it allows you to leverage a skill or a resource or whatever small amount of capital you have and take it to a higher level with the scale of other people. This is why saving small amounts of money has always been the way that communities have built wealth that were poor, whether they're Jewish, Chinese, Japanese, Korean, West Indian, African. We've talked about this before. We will continue to. Mexican as well. But in order to do that, there has to be some level of trust, and you have to be willing to subordinate your ego for the larger good and to avoid personality conflicts and clash. You determine ahead of time that the product of your union, the sum, is greater than the parts. But what's happening now is a lot of people are islands to themselves. They've been trained in only one or two professions. They have a skill that may be even outdated by technology, and they're in shock, unable to adjust and reconceptualize the experience, not as a crisis or a period of chaos, but as an opportunity to get another skill or to link up and form new alliances. This is why a lot of people just keep looking for jobs. It's not that they don't want to do something for themselves or that they don't know how. It's just easier to continue to go to the marketplace and ask somebody to tell you where you fit in without voluntarily asserting where you think you might fit in. Ed McMahon went and applied for a job. Johnny Carson saw something and they continued to roll together. Johnny Carson knew that Ed McMahon made him look better. That's why he gave him that high honor on the last show of the Tonight Show, the last episode. He was in tears praising the man who had played second fiddle in order to make him look better. Really, they were equals. The audience didn't know that, but Johnny Carson knew that he and Ed McMahon were really equals. He could not do what he did without him. So in this current environment, those people who are able to do what they can to unite with others, pool their resources effectively, manage ego, have an opportunity to create wealth, and actually find a more fulfilling experience. Experience a higher level of self-actualization. So I talk about this in my book. I've learned this the hard way. I share with you lessons that come from others who've mastered the principle better than myself. But building your team, pooling resources, and networking require subordination. Reggie around Barack Obama, he's another example. Reggie don't care if people call him a gopher, a yes man, or whatever. That man is Barack Obama's body man. He knows all the secrets. He knows where all the bodies are buried. But he'll do everything from carrying a notepad for President Obama to writing down names on business cards. That man is very powerful. Reggie. I don't even know his last. He's so powerful, he only has one name. Reggie. Obama's body man. We don't even know his last name. Reggie. I think Reggie may be more powerful than Valerie Jarrett. You will never see Reggie on Meet the Press, though. So subordination, vital skill. I'll let that simmer for a little bit. Let me give you another example on subordination. We're going to talk about black unemployment and President Obama's stance on it. And we will certainly talk about Jim Brown's comments last night on Real Sports with the great closet black militant Bryant Gumbel about Tiger Woods, Michael Jordan, the passive nature of professional athletes today, black athletes in particular, and the Nation of Islam. Jim Brown was asked questions directly about the Nation and Minister Farrakhan. He gave direct answers. So we'll comment on that. Let me give you another great example in subordination. Bruce from Virginia, Glenn from Philly, if you're listening, Bruce from Virginia is considering, and I think he has accepted the nomination to join our group, the Four Horsemen of Entrepreneurship and Business. Four Horsemen, one of the greatest examples of subordination. You think this could have worked if Tully Blanchard, Ole, and Arn didn't submit or subordinate their egos, rather, to Ric Flair?
Ole and Arn Anderson, Tully Blanchard, James J. Dillon, Nature Boy, Ric Flair. And you know, guys, I was just thinking, how awesome would it be if all four of you were in the ring at the same time? It's sort of an eight-man tag team type of thing, huh?
Well, I tell you what, they'd have to put up some pretty heavy money because I can't imagine four people getting in the ring against the four horse. I can't imagine eight guys getting in against this. I can't imagine anybody in their right mind getting in against this. But I can't imagine this. I can imagine that sometime during 86, Dusty Rhodes is going to take his tights, all of his wrestling gear, and put it outside the door of one of these buildings around the country with a sign on it that says, I quit. Rhodes, one way or another, we're going to get rid of you, and it's going to take place this year. Mark on it.
You know, guys, being part of the Four Horsemen, everywhere you go, all over the country, the people say, the horsemen are coming, and all the women go crazy. But you know, you start talking about the people we've done in. You go talk to Dusty Rhodes and ask him about his leg. You go ask Ronnie Garvin about his hand. You go ask the Road Warriors who dropped him right on top of their heads and left them laying. And the list goes on. So what four men are capable of getting in the ring with the Four Horsemen? Huh?
You answer well, that. What do you think, Arn?
Right here. Cornette, when these bashes started, I told you, we had the goal to begin with. When a bash is over, we will continue to have it. Gentlemen, anybody out there watching, we're a unit. The Four Horsemen are not four individuals. And last but not least, I don't want to say I told you so. I don't want to blow our own horn, but toot, toot, we are still recipients and owners of all the trophies. We make it happen in professional wrestling. Tell them, champ.
You see, Jim Cornette, in the case of the Four Horsemen, you have got
brains. You have got wealth. You have a tremendous amount of brawn. And ladies, let me assure you, there's not a gelding in the bunch. We are the studs in professional wrestling. We are the men that get it done. And we tell you we're going to be somewhere and we're going to beat somebody up. Then you know what? Put it in the bank, because we'll be there and we're going to beat somebody up.
I'm going to take a moment to allow that to marinate. Where is your and my unit? Four people. Can you even get four people willing to subordinate Eagle to accomplish a goal? I have no idea why I'm playing this record. About 4 days ago, I just thought about this. I had to take it back to 89, 88, Connecticut. You're feeling me right now. New York City. Definitely feeling me. And without question, Newark. Oh, pardon me. I said it wrong. Newark. East Orange. Irvington. Rutgers University. The RU Revolutionaries are... I have them in a trance right now. Baltimore, I see you as well. Philly, you were a little wishy-washy with the deep house music era. But without question, Chi-Town and Detroit, you all are in the front row. I'm saluting you right now. We'll be right back. It's the hottest show in the diaspora, June 24th, 2009. Where's your unit? Who's willing to subordinate their ego for the benefit of business interests, for the benefit of activism, for the benefit of elections, for the benefit of the family?
Olean, Arn Anderson, Tully Blanchard, James J. Dillon, Nature Boy, Ric Flair. And you know, guys, I was just thinking, how awesome would it be if all four of you were in the ring at the same time? It's sort of an eight-man tag team type of thing, huh?
Well, I tell you what, they'd have to put up some pretty heavy money, because I can't imagine four people getting in the ring against the four horse. I can't imagine eight guys getting in against this. I can't imagine anybody in their right mind getting in against this. But I can't imagine this. I can imagine that sometime during 86, Dusty Rhodes is going to take his tights, all of his wrestling gear, and put it outside the door of one of these buildings around the country with a sign on it that says, I quit. Rhodes, one way or another, we're going to get rid of you, and it's going to take place this year. Mark on it.
You know, guys, being part of the Four Horsemen, everywhere you go, all over the country, the people say, the horsemen are coming, and all the women go crazy. But you know, you start talking about the people we've done in. You go talk to Dusty Rhodes and ask him about his leg. You go ask Ronnie Garvin about his hand. You go ask the Road Warriors, who dropped him right on top of their heads and left them laying. And the list goes on. So what four men are capable of getting in the ring with the Four Horsemen? Huh?
What do you think, Arn?
Cornette, when these bashes started, I told you, we had the gold to begin with. When the bashes are over, we will continue to have it. Gentlemen, anybody out there watching, we're a unit. The Four Horsemen are not four individuals. And last but not least, I don't want to say I told you so. I don't want to blow our own horn, but toot, toot, we are still recipients and owners of all the trophies. We make it happen in professional wrestling. Tell them, champ. You see, Jim Cornette, in the case of the Four Horsemen, you have got brains. You have got wealth. You have a tremendous amount of brawn. And ladies, let me assure you, there's not a gelding in the bunch. We are the studs in professional wrestling. We are the men that get it done. And we tell you we're going to beat somewhere and we're going to beat somebody up. Then you know what? Put it in the bank, because we'll be there and we're going to beat somebody up.
There ain't nothing political or conscious about this song, but it sure is hot. You are tuned in to the Cedric Muhammad and Black Coffee program.
June 24th, 2009. 24th, 2007. Put the camera on me. Just run to the screen. See how I'm looking. Very regular today. No cuts, shaved, no problems. BlackElectorate.com, BlackCoffeeChannel.com, CedricMuhammad.com, CMCAT, more. I got more sites. I got sites like Jamaican Got Job. Some of you caught my ginger beer reference. Maybe one day we can toast it up righteously. And our cider. Apple cider. The inner circle knows about that. I don't let it ferment as some have in the past to get an effect. Alright, President Obama yesterday at his press conference, a good brother with a valuable, just performs a valuable service. Each morning I get emails from a longtime BlackElectorate.com viewer named Charles. Let me read Mr. Watford's latest. Email is called How to Moonwalk Politically. It says here, it looks like, yes, I'm reading my BlackBerry. Anyone have a problem with that? It looks like we're going to have to label President Obama as being the first black issue moonwalking president to hold office, because he sure knows how to sidestep this particular issue with his so-called grace of inclusiveness. He, President Obama, adamantly refuses to directly address our epidemic levels of unemployment. Now, another great black man, Rob Redding Jr., wrote a piece. It's on BlackElectorate.com. Obama dodges black unemployment question. Rob writes, President Obama today dodged a question about escalating black unemployment while taking only one question from the black-owned press during his news conference. The nation's first black president dodged American Urban Radio's April Ryan's question. And again, everybody, did you all see April Ryan's do? The makeup was, it was in surplus. The makeup was a little bit in surplus, but the beautiful April Ryan pinned President Obama to the wall a bit. So Rob Redding writes, the nation's first black president dodged American Urban Radio's April Ryan's question about what he will do to stop black unemployment from hitting 20%. The unemployment rate for blacks is at 14.9% compared to 9.4% for all Americans. Now, let me give you the actual audio. President Obama being asked by April Ryan about black unemployment. Give me your honest thoughts on this. There's no right or wrong answer. Here we go.
I've got time for two more questions. April?
Yeah, right here.
How are you
doing? I'm fine. Back on the economy. Mr. President, people are criticizing this Road to Recovery plan. Specifically, there are reports in the Washington Post that say that the African-American unemployment rate will go to 20% by the end of this year. And then you had your chairman of economic advisors say that targeted intervention may come next year if nothing changes. Why not target intervention now to stop the bloodletting in the black unemployment rate?
Well, look, the first of all, we know that when the African-American unemployment rate, the Latino unemployment rate are consistently higher than the national average. And so, if the economy as a whole is doing poorly, then you know that the African-American community is going to be doing poorly, and they're going to be hit even harder. The best thing that I can do for the African-American community or the Latino community or the Asian community, whatever community, is to get the economy as a whole moving. If I don't, hold on one second. Let me answer the question. If I don't do that, then I'm not going to be able to help anybody. So that's priority number one. It is true that in certain inner city communities, the unemployment rate was already sky high even before this recession. The ladders available for people to enter into the job market are even worse. And so we are interested in looking at proven programs that help people on a pathway to jobs. There was a reason why, right before Father's Day, I went to a program here locally in Washington called Europe, which has a proven track record of taking young, mostly minority people, some of whom have graduated from high school, some maybe who've just gotten their GED, and train them on computers and provide them other technical skills, but also train them on, you know, how to carry themselves in an office, how to write an email, some of the social skills that will allow them to be more employable. They've got a terrific placement rate after this one-year program. If there are ways that we can potentially duplicate some of those programs, then we're going to do so. So part of what we want to do is to find tools that will give people more opportunity. But the most important thing I can do is to lift the economy overall, and that's what my strategy is focused on.
Okay, now, how do you feel about that? How do you feel about President Obama's response to a pointed question about black male unemployment, not black male unemployment, pardon me, black unemployment, which some are saying may reach 20%. I wonder what it is for teenagers. Is it 50%? It likes to hover around 40%. But what do you, I don't want to comment yet on that. I'm going to play this again. I want you all to tell me. I'm going to put Summer Madness. This is a different version of it. Underneath April Ryan and President Barack Obama, I'm going to smooth it out for you. I need you all to tell me, how did the president do? Is he ignoring an issue, or did he say something that was a hint to the wise from the top? Smooth it out, President. Oh, pardon me, April. The new dude looks good, April. A slight surplus on the makeup, but that's a beautiful black woman because she's intelligent too.
I've got time for two more questions. April?
Yeah, right.
Where's
here.
April?
Right here. How are you doing?
How are you?
I'm fine. Back on the economy. Mr. President, people are criticizing this road recovery plan. Specifically, there are reports in the Washington Post that say that the African-American unemployment rate will go to 20% by the end of this year. And then you had your chairman of economic advisors say the targeted intervention may come next year if nothing changes. Why not target intervention now to stop the bloodletting in the black unemployment rate?
Well, look, the first of all, we know that when the African-American unemployment rate, the Latino unemployment rate are consistently higher than the national average. And so, you know, if the economy as a whole is doing poorly, then you know that the African-American community is going to be doing poorly, and they're going to be hit even harder. The best thing that I can do for the African-American community or the Latino community or the Asian community, whatever community, is to get the economy as a whole moving. If I don't, hold on one second. Let me answer the question. If I don't do that, then I'm not going to be able to help anybody. So that's priority number one. It is true that in certain inner city communities, the unemployment rate was already sky high even before this recession. The ladders available for people to enter into the job market are even worse. And so we are interested in looking at proven programs that help people on a pathway to jobs. There was a reason why, right before Father's Day, I went to a program here locally in Washington called Europe, which has a proven track record of taking young, mostly minority people, some of whom have graduated from high school, some maybe who've just gotten their GED, and train them on computers and provide them other technical skills, but also train them on how to carry themselves in an office, how to write an email, some of the social skills that will allow them to be more employable. They've got a terrific placement rate after this one-year program. If there are ways that we can potentially duplicate some of those programs, then we're going to do so. So part of what we want to do is to find tools that will give people more opportunity. But the most important thing I can do is to lift the economy overall, and that's what my strategy is focused on.
All right, last question.
Okay, now what do you think of that? Is that an acceptable answer to that question? Now, before I give my view, I want to know what you all think. President Obama received a direct question about the African-American unemployment rate, as it is called, major problem, and you heard the answer. I want your view, not mine. I want your view. I want to put this right in between ideology, pragmatism, and the reality of our relationship, or the relationship that is formed around President Obama in terms of symbol and in terms of substance. What do you think? I don't want left ideology. I don't want right. I don't want center. I want to know what you think about the exchange between April Ryan of American Urban Radio Network and President Barack Obama on the black unemployment rate set to go to 20%. Black male unemployment rate is through the roof. One more time. I'm going to compel thought and action.
I've got time for two more questions. April?
Right here. How you doing? I'm fine. Back on the economy. Mr. President, people are criticizing this road recovery plan. Specifically, there are reports in the Washington Post that say that the African-American unemployment rate will go to 20% by the end of this year. And then you had your chairman of economic advisors say the targeted intervention may come next year if nothing changes. Why not target intervention now to stop the bloodletting in the black unemployment rate?
Well, look, the first of all, we know that when the African-American unemployment rate, the Latino unemployment rate are consistently higher than the national average. And so, you know, if the economy as a whole is doing poorly, then you know that the African-American community is going to be doing poorly, and they're going to be hit even harder. The best thing that I can do for the African-American community or the Latino community or the Asian community, whatever community, is to get the economy as a whole moving. If I don't, hold on one second. Let me answer the question. If I don't do that, then I'm not going to be able to help anybody. So that's priority number one. It is true that in certain inner city communities, the unemployment rate was already sky high even before this recession. The ladders available for people to enter into the job market are even worse. And so we are interested in looking at proven programs that help people on a pathway to jobs. There was a reason why right before Father's Day, I went to a program here locally in Washington called Europe, which has a proven track record of taking young, mostly minority people, some of whom have graduated from high school, some maybe who've just gotten their GED, and train them on computers and provide them other technical skills, but also train them on, you know, how to carry themselves in an office, how to write an email, some of the social skills that will allow them to be more employable. They've got a terrific placement rate after this one-year program. If there are ways that we can potentially duplicate some of those programs, then we're going to do so. So part of what we want to do is to find tools that will give people more opportunity. But the most important thing I can do is to lift the economy overall, and that's what my strategy is focused on.
Yeah, so we don't do shout-outs, but we do acknowledge people from time to time. I want to acknowledge someone by the name of Cedric Muhammad, who I spoke to last night.
Yeah, man.
He's become a dear friend, a man of substance and intellectual. Let me give you some of his websites. And many of you longtime Star and Buckwild listeners, you know this man's pedigree very well. BlackCoffeeChannel.com. I repeat, BlackCoffeeChannel.com is where you can go. He's doing a very, very politically conscious radio show at BlackCoffeeChannel.com, and also BlackElectorate.com is a website that we've spoken about from time to time. Again, BlackElectorate.com.
Cedric Muhammad.
Ooh, yeah. The
to do. Cedric Muhammad. Cedric Muhammad.
From the college of the streets, I got a PhD in how to make ends meet. Inflation and the nation don't bother me, cause I'm a scholar with a dollar, you can plain to see.
You are tuned in to The Watchman, Cedric Muhammad, on the Black Coffee Channel. Cedric Muhammad.